Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Ask not.
The Beatles.
Circuses on the air.
When the president does it,
sometimes you feel like
that means that it is not illegal.
Sometimes you don't.
Tear down this wall.
Here's Johnny.
Hey, Luke. May the force be with you.
It was you, Kristen, who shot J.R.
I did not have sexual relations with that woman.
Oh, we're not gay. Not that there's anything wrong with that.
John has been waiting a long time to take the reins.
My name is Dave Letterman. Last night, I became a father. Thank you very much.
Today, Apple is going to reinvent the phone.
George W. Bush, and I approve this message.
For the third time in six seasons, it's one goal achieved. The Chicago Blackhawks win the Stanley Cup. The Blackhawks win the Stanley Cup.
It's in time. And the Chicago Cubs win the World Series. The Cubs have done it.
And now, this is history.
You're going to need outstanding hosts.
With Dave Plyer.
It's a guy, but I love you.
And Dave Schwann on 720 WGN.
And live from the Skyline Studios, Dave Schwann joins us. Dave, what's going on, buddy?
Dave, how you doing? We made it through January.
Let's talk about our first piece. President-elect Franklin Roosevelt survived an assassination attempt tied to Chicago, 1933.
Yep, and the reason it's tied to Chicago is because the mayor of the time, Anton Cermak, was riding in a car with him in Florida, and for want of a better way of putting it, he took the bullet. The would-be assassin missed Roosevelt, hit Mayor Cermak, who subsequently died from the wound.
Well, at that time, inaugurations took place in March, not January.
That's
so
right.
If he was killed, Vice President-elect John Nance Garner would have assumed the presidency at the bottom of the Great Depression. Boy, where would we be today?
Yeah. Right? That would be amazing. And just one pointer, the reason up until that time they had been in March was because travel was much more difficult for the presidents to get to wherever they were to Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
And then travel became easier, really, in modern times with Franklin Roosevelt. And they said, well, let's move it up to January.
Well, and a lot of it was done by train at the time.
Yeah.
1940, equally as important, Tom and Jerry was created by Hanna-Barbera. But MGM actually put those out there in the movie theaters. That's a classic I remember growing up with watching on, like, Channel 32.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I remember watching them. And I have a vague memory, Dave, when I was a little kid, of seeing Tom and Jerry cartoons and or Looney Tunes in theaters.
In the theaters?
Yeah. I'm going back to 1964.
So, I mean, we're talking about the fact that there was always a little cartoon that would open up a show.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And at the very, very, very end of newsreels also.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Those ads finally ended around 65.
It was. It was the 1960s because people had access, obviously, through television at that point. Because visually, you were talking about the newsreels a little bit. Those started like in the 1910s. They were silent at the time. And then that's really how people got to see the news. If you weren't picking up a paper, I mean, at least seeing motion in what you were reading about or hearing about on the radio, that's where you had to get it from, was the movie theaters.
And think of how novel that was to, in that time, 100 and some years ago, when you're sitting in a room and you're watching people moving, and you know they're not in the room with you.
They're not in the room with you. Nope. 1953, The Adventures of Superman premiered on television. So that was like the first real live action that got out to the entire country.
With George Reeves.
Yes. Let's take a little listen to that opening.
Faster than a speeding bullet. More powerful than a locomotive. Able to leap tall buildings at a single bound.
Look, up in the sky, it's a bird.
It's a plane.
It's Superman. Yes, it's Superman. Strange visitor from another planet who came to Earth with powers and abilities far beyond those of mortal men. Superman, who can change the course of mighty rivers, bend steel in his bare hands, and who, disguised as Clark Kent, mild-mannered reporter for a great metropolitan newspaper, fights a never-ending battle for truth, justice, and the American way.
remember watching Superman as a kid?
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely. And the reason I have a vivid memory of it is if the Cubs weren't playing in the afternoon, if they were idle, or if the game ended early or was rained out, WGN-TV would show a Superman rerun.
Yeah, right. No, I remember that. I totally remember that. And they would air weekdays and stuff, but they would air Sunday mornings.
Sunday morning, definitely. Yeah.
I watch it with the Cisco Kid and the Lone Ranger.
Yeah.
Yeah. 1959, the Barbie doll goes on sale. Let's listen to a classic commercial.
Barbie, you're beautiful. You make me feel my Barbie doll is really real. Barbie's small and so petite. Her clothes and figure look so neat. Her dancing outfit rings a bell. At parties she will cast a spell. Purses, hats, and gloves galore. And all the gadgets gals adore.
Barbie dressed for swim and fun is only $3. Her lovely fashions range from $1 to $5. Look for Barbie wherever dolls are sold.
Someday I'm gonna be exactly like you. Till then, I know just what I'll do. Barbie, beautiful Barbie. I'll make believe that I am you.
You can tell it's Mattel. Well,
1924, the first ice cream cone rolling machine was introduced. 1936, the first players were elected to the Baseball Hall of Fame. Ty Cobb, Babe Ruth, Honus Wagner, Christy Mathewson, and Walter Johnson. That was the first class.
Yeah. And again, I'll talk about the Baseball Museum. There's something for everyone there.
There is. There is.
And it's not a huge, overwhelming building. You know, you think the Museum of Baseball History. Mm-hmm. It's not a big building, but that's fine. You know, it's rather spread out, and it fits very well in the charming small-town atmosphere of Cooperstown, New York.
But what you get to do is you get to go see your favorites, and then you get to learn about some other people that were groundbreakers and legends in the business.
Yes.
1967, the Chicago blizzard struck with 23 inches of snow, causing 800 buses and 50,000 autos to be abandoned in Chicago. That was the blizzard of 67 when I was just a little tyke.
You were very little tyke.
I was a baby. I was 4 months old, 5 months old.
Oh, yeah. The pictures that were in the papers that still today are amazing. You know, just looking up a major thoroughfare, Lakeshore Drive or an expressway, and seeing, you know, car after car after car. I will never forget the day that storm started. We went to school as per usual on the morning, and it started snowing so hard they let us go right after lunch. They dismissed school, and we walked home. My friends and I trudged through what was already had to have been 10 to 12
inches of
snow on the ground.
Sure, and I have to imagine school was closed week.
A couple of days.
Maybe, at least. Yeah, right.
And ordinarily it took my dad about a half hour to get home from work. It took him 3.5 hours that night. There were no cell phones. We were worried. There was no way that he could contact us to say, I'm okay, we're getting here slowly but surely, but finally pulled in.
Here in the Chicago area, we tend to think of this as our storm. Actually, it hit most of the state and even neighboring states. For a regional weather report, we go to Harlan Drager in the city room of the Chicago Daily News.
The snowstorm that slammed into Chicago's midsection has left a wide surrounding area in a state of near paralysis. For suburbanites as well as city residents, the word is don't travel unless it's an absolute emergency. Toll roads still are in bad shape. Many other major routes and secondary roads are impassable. Down in the Joliet area, for example, U.S. Highway 45 and Illinois 102 and 54 are still closed down by 7-foot drifts.
This is lost to a generation, but people used to collect really key headlines from the newspapers. And I know we have a Chicago Tribune that I think my grandfather had.
I have a Daily News. I have a Tribune.
From the blizzard of 67, and then we also have stuff from the blizzard of 79. Newspapers don't last all that long. Even my grandfather has some World War II newspapers that my grandmother, and they are yellow, and they are brittle.
Handle with care.
You almost can't open
No, because the they'll paper, break apart.
It'll yeah. absolutely break apart.
Yeah.
Something lost to a generation there. 1973, and there's a lot of TV premieres because that happens in the beginning of the year and in the fall. Barnaby Jones, one of your favorites, Dave.
Quinn Martin production.
I have to say, I was up late at night, and something woke me up. I couldn't go back to sleep, and yep, I watched Barnaby Jones. How sad is that?
Who was his secretary?
Lee Merriweather.
Yes.
Oh, please, I remember that all day long. Absolutely. 1974, Good Times premiered on CBS. That was a spinoff of...
Good Times?
Yeah, it was...
All in the Family.
Maud.
Okay.
Spinoff of a spinoff. That was right, the first spinoff right, of a spinoff. Right. Now, Dave, I spoke to comedian Jimmy Walker about the heat he took from the black community and even his fellow cast members when he played the character of J.J. Evans on TV classic Good Times.
We took an unbelievable amount of heat, for whatever. I never really understood it. I never really got it. But what it did was... It eliminated ethnic shows for 10 years.
It did. Okay.
Because the networks did not want to do any ethnic shows.
Yeah,
they'll do dramas now, but comedy they won't do really because they're afraid to offend people. And it's been generational. You know, Cosby, when he did his show, which was excellent, he wanted to do it as the Honeymooners.
Yeah.
And it was 10 years after our show, and the network said, absolutely not. Because, minorities are going to be offended that they're not rich black people. So they made them as out of touch with what black lives are as possible. I'm sure there's some minorities who are like the Cosbys, but that's not the majority.
Well, even
and now they're doing now. My line has always been because of our show, you will never see a poor black family ever again in a sitcom on TV. Ever again.
And let me tell you, that show was nominated for Emmys, Golden Globes. You won an Emmy for your role.
I mean, so think
about that. I mean, you were honored for what you did back in the 70s.
Yeah, well, we won things there, and we actually won a BET award, which I would never be, they would never invite me ever again to their, their thing, Black Entertainment Television. But I think that we're so sensitive, and like I said, I think we're coming to the end of our society as we knew it and as we know it, and it's going to be it's becoming worster and worster. And I think even in the political vein, the civility is unbelievably negative. You can say I disagree with you, I don't agree, and you bring your points up. Even my girl Whoopi Goldberg, and I love Whoopi, she's fabulous. I mean, if she doesn't agree with Shanine's Hero, fine. You know, she can say it in a debate form, which they're in that form every day. But the treatment was a little rough there. You know, you can say, I disagree with everything you say, and here's why I disagree with it. It's terrible, it's stupid. Okay, fine, no big deal. But I think civility has left our society just out of whack.
Yeah.
And I think it's getting more worster and worser by the minute.
Dave Plyer on 720 WGN. We're talking history with Dave Schwann. So 45 years ago this past week, TV sitcom Laverne and Shirley, top-rated spinoff of TV's Happy Days, which starred the late Penny Marshall and Cindy Williams, made its television debut. Some years ago, I spoke to Cindy Williams, who played Shirley, about that journey.
We got a phone call, and it was Gary, and he asked Penny, he said, I got these two parts on Happy Days, these two girls who date the fleet.
I love your Gary impersonation.
I thought maybe you and Cindy could come over, take a week off, come over, play the parts. And Penny said, yeah, here's Cindy. And she put me on the phone, and he said, you know, that to me. And I said, yeah, sounds like fun if Carl will let us go. And Carl let us go. And we went over and played these two girls. Oh, my goodness. We had no idea. Neither one of us had ever seen Happy Days. She hadn't seen it. And I didn't have a TV at the time. And so we just played these girls coming on. We were smoking real cigarettes when we came on.
Is
in
that
rehearsal.
Right?
Oh, yeah. Fixing each other's lingerie, pulling up each other's bra straps and doing all this stuff. And the director...
I just remember it was pretty damn sexy for that show to have. I mean, you played a pretty cool role.
We had no idea. We were on like a family. We didn't even know what a family show meant. Just, and we flicked our cigarettes across the stage and came on. And then Jerry Paris, who was directing, said, stop. And he said, you can't smoke. This is family hour. You can't smoke. Go off stage and begin again. And we had no idea what the heck he was talking about.
Just 35 million.
Family hour? What's he talking about?
Family hour and 35 million people watching this show.
And we just had no idea what he was talking about. So we put the cigarettes out. And we just and we were chewing gum. We said, all right, we'll chew gum. And we'll have bobby pins in our hair. And we'll cut the checking each other's bra straps out. And we'll just come on, whatever. And so we did. And we did the show, and we went back to our little writing job, and then about, I don't know, 2-3 weeks later, somebody called and said, they want to do a spinoff. Again, we had no idea what that meant, and it had to be explained to us what a spinoff was. It was like, I don't know, taking two, I don't know, waitresses and saying, you're famous. Saying what? I'm telling you, it took us a year to catch up with and get and say, oh, we get it.
Yeah.
We had no idea. We were so naive. And, you know, I mean, someone asked me just today, they asked me about the accent on the show. I said, it was so fast and everything. And then it started and every cast member was from back east, and they all have these, you know, eastern accents.
Right, yeah.
And so I thought, well, I better have one too. And I didn't even have time to process that or think about it. And so I just adopted this sort of, you know, kind of bad, very bad New York accent.
It was thicker in the beginning of the show. Yeah,
it was terrible, terrible. It was awful, and I knew it. But I thought, well, everybody else has it. But we're from Milwaukee.
Yeah, right.
What the heck? You know, and I thought, well, Milwaukee, maybe they have, you know, those accents. Anyway, 13 weeks into it, Gary came down onto the stage, and I write about that in the book, and he said, Cindy, I want to talk to you about the accent. I said, lose it? He said, yes. I said, thank you. And that was the end of that. Penny and I had no time to process this. None. It's like being taken from, I don't even know, oblivion into like the Kleeglites. I can't even describe it to anybody. It's like, it's just, just daunting, daunting.
Yeah, no.
And then about a year later, it caught up with us, or we caught up with it, and said, so this is what it's like. And we were famous, and it's just like, oh, my God. And people ask me, what's it like to be famous? It's like everything you think it is. It's just like overwhelming, fabulous, thrilling, daunting, you know, a little frightening, and wonderful.
All right, 1979, and it was another big favorite of yours, Dave. The Dukes of Hazzard premiered on CBS. Roscoe Picotrain and the boys.
Oh, yes.
Boss Hogg and the whole gang. 1984, Michael Jackson is burned during filming a Pepsi commercial. I think that was maybe for the Super Bowl, because it was leading up to the Super Bowl. He's filming all these Pepsi commercials.
He was
burned pretty bad.
He was, and that was supposed to be... Oh, what was the song in Thriller? Well, the Thriller, you know, the werewolf changing over.
Yeah.
That whole scene there. But yes, that's how that happened.
Just a little reminder, don't forget to listen to the Sinatra Hours Sunday morning, 6:30 to 9, right before Uncle Dean. Always a pleasure, Dave.
You bet, Dave.
See you next week.
Okay. What a wonderful world this would be.